From the Dharma point of view, we are kind of stuck in a fundamental puzzle or problem. And the problem is this, that the self is built, is constructed as a mechanism for survival, to control, to get what the self, the body needs, to get food, to get not to be in danger, not to be looked after. Self is a mechanism for survival. For that it needs to control things, it needs to control itself, it needs to control the food, it needs to control the world to some extent. The self needs to feel ownership. The self also, and this is very relevant to the subject of home, the self needs to feel that things are stable and consistent and not changing and going to pieces. Otherwise it feels loss of home straight away. And you could redefine the sense of loss of home as everything changing and not stable and going to pieces. So the self needs to, is busy with that process, making sure things are consistent, stable. For example, the self doesn't like the body to age, the self doesn't like viruses, the self doesn't like no food, the self doesn't like no love, the self wants a nice house, everything, and stable, and keeping that just as it is. And yet, life is not stable. Life cannot be owned. Life is full of changes. And life is not that interested in whether you survive or don't survive. Life doesn't think I have to provide survival to every being. So there's a fundamental, the self needs these things and life doesn't provide it. Life provides instead of that change. Life provides instability. Life provides non-ownership. It cannot be owned, cannot be controlled, uncontrollable. So that's a fundamental paradox. And that's the basis of our existential suffering, according to the Dharma. It's the basis of the first noble truth of the Buddha. The source of suffering is our need to control what is uncontrollable, to preserve what is changing, to own what is not ownable, which cannot be owned. And that creates constant suffering. Aging is suffering, disease is suffering, loss is suffering, death is suffering. We have one thing for a minute, then it goes. We have a house, then it goes, an earthquake. We have a planet and then it's burning up. We have, everything is going through our fingers. And because of that, we're constantly suffering, even if we feel that things are temporarily okay. You know, we think life is not so bad, but if we look more carefully, we see that it's a struggle. Underneath, it's a constant struggle. And that's the first noble truth. And it's really about, and this sort of the subtext, I think, of everything that we've been talking about and Yasmin has been talking about as the experience of homelessness, of loss of home, the subtext is that we are dependent on conditions and that home is about conditions. Usually we feel at home if we have the conditions, such as money in the bank, food in the refrigerator, a house that's not broken down. We had some examples already today. A family that doesn't fight each other, some love and respect from the community, relationships, whatever it is. Conditions, 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 conditions. And when we see one falling down, we feel homeless, So we quickly try and put it together again. We see one thing that happens, we feel homeless, we have to work. We have to work with our relationships, our this, our that, our job, identity. I need respect. I need to be whatever it is. I need to be somebody. And it's fundamental. What I'm saying is that this is inherent. According to the Dharma, this is not a problem that we need to solve and then we'll be all right. It's inherent in the lived situation, which is why the first noble truth of the Buddha is that suffering is inherent in the lived experience. Inherent.
Built in.
And it's not a problem. We don't shouldn't beat ourselves because we feel homeless, as if we've got a problem. Okay, maybe stronger at a certain time in our life or because of certain reasons, but everybody is in the same boat, actually, in terms, if we look at things existentially. But often kiumi, can we are all in the same boat. That's why the truth, the first noble truth of the Buddha, is that suffering is is built into the lived experience because of our need to control conditions which are uncontrollable fundamentally. And this is why Bayit is such a good model for that. It's a really good metaphor or image of that of this puzzle, this problem. And it's not it's also relative. In other words, we don't know what it is that's going to make us feel homeless. Every situation will be different for every person, but we'll all feel underneath some of it. And a small story, I was in Bombay many years ago, my three daughters. We all went as a family to India for a year, and we were in Bombay, and my suitcase got broken, so I wanted to get it mended. And I found a guy sitting there on the side of the road in the middle of traffic and cars going past. And he was sitting on the side of the road with two tools for mending shoes. Like, just two tools on a little cloth like the size of this, size of this paper. There he was sitting there. Nothing else. Just two tools on a piece of cloth. Three tools. I said to him, "Can you mend shoes?" He said, "Yes." "Can you mend my suitcase?" He said, "Sure. Bring me the suitcase." I said, it's heavy. I would like, can you come to me to mend the suitcase? I'm not far away." He said, "Oh no, I must not leave my station. My customers will be disappointed." He had nothing, these two things. And I suddenly realized that was his spot. That was his home. That was his place. Not five stars, not nothing. That was his. There he felt a king, at home in his place with the traffic on the midrash. So, it's all relative. But so another way of looking at this, of course, is home is a comfort zone, is a shetach shel comfort, nochut, and we build it according to number of conditions, whatever conditions in our childhood, in our this, in our story, in our life story. We say, this is my comfort zone. I have to keep preserving its boundaries and holding on to this comfort zone, otherwise I feel homeless. I define this comfort zone as my home, and if something goes, I feel homeless. Whatever it is, family, love, relationships, job, money, materials, anything, health, this we define as the comfort. It's another way of defining home as comfort zone. And what it does is create a great deal of anxiety. This anxiety, degot, or charada. I think the German word angst is probably philosophically the right word for this, rather than charadais, angst. It's existential. It's not really that. That's mitsuka is too strong a bit. I think it's like
it's existential also, isn't it?
well, you know the Hebrew better than I do. It's like existential insecurity that's low level all the time. I once read a scientific paper on the brain where the conclusion was that the ground state of the neurons in the brain is a constant mild level of anxiety. That's the background. Yes, the ground state, the background of the function of the background of the brain when nothing else is happening is like a constant state of anxiety or kononut or you got it? They do work. Okay. Yeah, yeah, fine. Fine. Thank you. And it's very closely related to
very low level of anxiety.
And very low level of anxiety.
Low, I wouldn't say low.
That's hard. Shabbat coming. It's a lot high anxiety for lifnei Shabbat. And then stopping. And I think today someone said it here in the room, we have a very good example of this angst, of this low level anxiety, in the sense that we're no longer sure if the planet itself is our home. It's something that wasn't there 50 years ago or 30 years. There was an assumption that the planet could provide or could hold us. Now we don't even feel that the planet can actually be a home. It goes on and on and on, this potential sense of dependence on conditions. So therefore, the bottom line is not to take it personally. It's really an existential situation that is built in to our need to control the world, to make it possible for us to survive by controlling conditions, and an unreal sense of ownership. And it creates a lot of agitation, isheket, and the isheket is one of the marks of homelessness that we all feel. If we're asking, if you ever want to say, you know, I'm at home, it's other people's problem. It's Yasmin's clients, the people answering the advert in England that are immigrants, they feel not at home. But then if you ask, well, what about your isheket or my isheket? Where does that come from? Then we begin to feel, wait a minute, maybe I'm also experiencing this sense of homelessness, which is inherent or built in because of our dependence on conditions, constantly on external conditions. The self is constantly watching and watchful that the conditions are supportive and stable. Constantly checking what's missing, what's not stable, what's changing, what might change, what might change then. If I do this, will that be worse? If I take this path, will something change down there? Constantly busy. So much thinking comes from there, so much the isheket in the mind. If I do this, then that. If I do that, then that. Maybe that, maybe that. Ma ye. If kaha, you know, this. So.
Insurance companies like it.
Oh yeah, but they just have their isheket is just as much. And we find ourselves, in other words, constantly looking for home. And the constant state of all living beings, according to the view of Dharma, which is quite a radical, if you like, a total view, is that all living beings, an ant, a human being, a dog or a cat, spends most of its life looking for home, looking for security, looking for boundaries, looking for constancy, that things don't change, looking for possible threats and possible change. and defining its comfort. There's a teaching called the Dharma of the Eight Conditions, which is the sort of like Buddhist biology that says all living beings, from a chaidak to a human being, need pleasure and not pain, need gaining things, having and not losing, need loving and not hating, and need belonging to some sort of kihila, some sort of similar being, some sense of belonging, called the Dharma of the Eight Conditions. Never mind, it's just sort of, it's all really defined there in the text. The Buddhist text goes into this a lot. It's quite busy with this. And an interesting image that seems very extreme if we don't understand it from this point of view is that once a group of Hindu fire worshippers came to the Buddha and said, why don't you worship fire, the god of fire? Because until today Hinduism is very busy with worshipping fire. And the Buddha said to them, what's fire? He said, you're burning. You're burning. You're burning with this isheket. You're burning to busy with busyness. You are the ones burning. Don't worship fire. There's fire. You're on fire. And by the need to control, by the need to survive, by the need to... You're on fire. And the image of nirvana, you've heard of the word of nirvana. And what it actually means in the Sanskrit is cooling down and cooling the fires. And the fires of agitation, or isheket, we're busy trying to control everything. Nirvana is defined as cooling the fire. And there's a small little basograin that fire in the East is a sign of agitation, and when the fire is put out, the fire simply returns to the universe. So cooling is also returning to the universe. Whereas the fire, when it's burning, the madura, is burning very hot, very agitated, needs conditions, namely wood. When the conditions are finished, the fire goes back to the world. So cooling is not just cooling the fire, the kibui esh, it's actually returning the fire to its universal home. So, what we're running away from something, running to something, we're busy, we're on fire. This is quite a radical view in the Dharma. And the Buddha said, and I'll quote this from the sutta, from the ancient text. He said, always frightened is this mind. The mind is always agitated about problems that have not yet happened, not yet arising, or about problems that already did happen. If there exists release from this fear, please tell me, someone is asking the Buddha. And the Buddha answers, there is no other way except enlightenment and austerity. Austerity is liot minimum profil. Okay, reduce a little bit your hisdokokut, your neediness. But enlightenment and a little bit, keep low profile. Not apart from working with the senses. Not apart from letting go of everything. Not apart from any of these do I see real safety for living beings. So what the Buddha is saying is, because it's inherent in the lived experience, therefore no temporary solutions here. If we really want to find safety in the changing, threatening world that we're dependent on, we have to go all the way. And enlightenment or nirvana or letting go of everything is the only way. We can't fix the problem. Temporarily we can feel better, we can make, and that's really where I would say the Dharma moves way off, to another territory from psychology. Because the Dharma would say, yeah, you can help a bit by making your comfort zone bigger, by making it, by doing something about it, or making yourself more comfortable, or making yourself less dependent on a comfort zone. You can do all of these things, but in the end, you can't find real safety in any other place except total letting go. Total letting it all go and awakening. So it's quite a radical statement, and I'm going to go back to this statement about. But from our point of view, from us here, what we can learn from this, and this is, I think, what we've heard from Western psychology, it is compatible, is that the way to deal with this fundamental paradox that I mentioned before, that the self needs, is dependent on conditions which it cannot control, and therefore it must feel at home less to some extent, is to be less dependent on conditions. To gradually work to be less dependent on conditions. And since the conditions are experienced whenever the senses and the mind meets the world, that's the place to work to make us less dependent on conditions. So, for example, okay, I know it's complicated. So, as the dependent on conditions, hatatlut al tnaim, anachnu chovim et hatlut hazeh al yedei a kol rega shehachushim shelanu pogesh mashu. As ze hatefa shetzirich lavod kedei leshachrei otanu mihatnaim, mihatlut shel al tnaim. L'dugma, ruim, lo yodea, okay, dugma ktana she, but pashut ze oleli, okay? Lo dugma hachi tova, but pashut often spontani ze oleli akshav. Yesh li kelev she, you know, kol hazman noveach meod meod chazak l'anashim shebaim. Kelev mamash matok, aval gadol. Roya germani, and there's two kinds of people. Some people come and very scared because a big dog comes running, barking, bang, 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 and they get very scared. To me, this is not seeing something. They are reacting from instinct, from fear. The dog has never in its life hurt anybody, even touched the slightest person, never once.
But that they don't know.
And they don't know that. Okay. But there are others that see the dog coming, relate to the dog as a being, and not because they're Dharma or whatever, but just by some sort of, I don't know what, they have less fear, and they have relationship. They say two words to the dog, and everything's totally different. No problem, no fear. The dog is happy, wags its tail. It just wants to be recognized. It wants some relationship. So if you see dog coming, you know, instant, your protection, you know, it's a small example where your senses can go in so many different directions. It's through the senses, the chushim, and the patterns, the tavniyot, and the what we do, and our tugvot, our reactions and our relationships. The same with anything. We can see something as a threat, we can see a person as a threat, a people, a neighbors, a political, we can see something as a problem, we can see something as chaseli, or we can look at it and say, wait a minute, I'm looking at this straight, what is my genuine experience? It may be pleasant, it may be unpleasant, but at that moment I'm less dependent on a certain condition to be in a certain to life to provide me like chaim lesapek li ha-nochut, ha comfort zone, ha. So it's less dependent. So seeing takes away our dependence, because we see things as they are, unless through the filter of tlut or needing certain conditions. Nevertheless, in the Dharma, one of the things that it is there is actually, and again, this is similar to Western psychology, training in autonomia, in autonomy. Nosafla mashu, or should we say, on the path for ultimately freedom, where the Buddha says, you know, no real safety in the end except real awakening, but on the way, it's good for you to feel, to learn to be autonomy, to learn more autonomy. And the last words of the Buddha before he died, the last sentence of the Buddha before he died was, be an island to yourself. Liot I atzmecha. And that's like, find your home in yourself. Because if you don't find, if there's a catch 22, if you don't find a home in yourself, it's actually very hard to practice for working with the senses or practice at all. If you can't, if you're too agitated, your temida I sheket, you can't start to find sheket. You can't even start to meditate. I mean, it's very hard to do practice if there's so much isheket or tlut or balagan. So the Buddha actually said it's helpful in the journey to actually train yourself to be more autonomic, to be more stable, to be more an island, I la'atzmecha. And this is what we were doing today. Every exercise we did, small exercise today, even 5 minutes, was in this direction. Steadiness, quietness, feeling our body solid, weight of the body, I am here. All of that is in the direction of autonomia. I am here. I exist. I'm sitting in my place. This feeling, I am in my place. Ani b'mokom sheli. Ani lo tzerich shum davar. עכשיו ברגע הזה אני במקום שאני לא צריך תנאים שום דבר. So this experience of being an island is part of the Dharma practice. And the Buddha said, be islands to yourselves. If you don't understand, please say, be a refuge to yourselves. Refuge is miflat. Bechaseh. Let the Dharma be your island. Let the Dharma be your refuge. And how does someone dwell or be, live? Shohe. As an island to himself. He, Shohe, abides, contemplating the body as body, being in the body as the body. In other words, meditating on body as body. Just that. Simple. Not the body because I need a better body, a healthy body, unhealthy body, this body, that. No, body as body. Tchushot. That's it. That's already, he says, meditating on the body as the body. With energy, very aware and mindful, letting go wanting and worrying about the world and needing, and meditating on feelings as feelings, letting go needing and wanting and fretting for the world, mind as mind, in other words, meditating on the mind as the mind. And he says, he repeats himself again and again on these suttas, these texts. Keep to your territory, he said to the monks. Just keep to your space. keep to your a little bit. So what we talked earlier in the break about retreat. Nachon is a useful model. I think even a retreat is a useful model. Here's a territory, keep in the territory and practice. That's the way you slowly, slowly you build a sense of autonomy. To be an island to yourself. There is also fundamentally the experience that makes a real difference when we meditate in developing the sense of autonomy is that we stop resisting change, we stop litnaged l'shinui, but experience change fully. And we'll talk more about that later, but it's just the key here is to be with change and not to resist it. Doesn't matter what change, can be an unpleasant change. Something goes wrong with the body. Instead of resisting it, trying to fix it, trying to this it, trying to that it, just experience change. And it's exactly solving the paradox that I talked about right at the beginning. The kol ha-sevel, kol ha-business of being homeless is because the self needs to control the uncontrollable. So here we're saying, the Buddha is saying, don't try and control the uncontrollable, just enjoy the dance, ha-rikud, of the uncontrollable. Just let the change happen, be with it, dance with it, observe it, instead of trying to fix it or stop it. And that's radical, it's not easy, but it's the way to practice. It's a spiritual direction towards finding a deeper place of home. The interesting, just for Sograyan, there's three images of being stable and not destroyed by change or by threat or by difficulty. One is the image of the rock, Hasela, strong, solid. The water pass by, wind pass by, the rock is solid, and you can experience yourself as rock, or the direction of rockness. Second is the glass. Things pass through you, but you're completely transparent. Nothing, it doesn't stick. Difficulty will come, someone will shout at you, it doesn't stick. There's nowhere to stick. Your glass, it goes through, comes to another side. And the third is the basket. That the wind can roll the basket, roll. The basket rolls along, but the basket always ends up okay. It can roll in the wind, but it's light. So because the basket is light, it always stays protected. So like here are three models or images of how to deal with difficult change, difficult experience, and you still stay solid, you still stay there, you still stay intact. So what I'm trying to say here is that there is a training in the Dharma which is about building a home, sense of home in you, sense of autonomy, sense of stability in the face of change, which is a process and a training, and it's not on the way. And there are also behaviors that go with it. And here we see, you know, all kinds of behaviors which are inside the spiritual dimension. For example, the Buddha mentioned austerity. Austerity is needing less. So it's, you know, like Jesus said, easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to find the kingdom of heaven. In other words, the more you have, the more problems you have. So have less. Because actually having less, you have more sense of home. You don't need so much, you don't process so much, you don't demand so much from the world, so things are a little easier. Not the end of the problem, it's on the way. It's a kind of tachana baderech, but it's a useful behavior to have, to be a minimum profile to the world, and less needy, less busy with what I have and what I might lose. So that's one aspect, austerity. And of course the monks in the time of the Buddha had nothing, and all of them have nothing, and why in monasteries today they don't have anything. And it's part of that tradition that if you have less, you have less busy with your comfort zone. It's not a solution from in the end, of course. It's only useful. And I know plenty of people that have more, that are very, very kind of very developed spiritually, that they have a lot of money, or they have. It's not in the end the big issue, but it's helpful that to go in that direction.
Isn't it the dependency that makes the difference?
Yes, but if you're busy collecting, it tends to affect the mind, and that you become more dependent. But it's not absolute. So sometimes people have a lot, and they're just free in the middle of wealth. So it's not an absolute, but generally it's helpful to need less and to be less demanding on life.
Less needy.
It's helpful, yeah. To be a little bit austere, renunciation. To do like the man on Bombay I mentioned, who really just seemed such a happy man with his three tools, but he's got his dignity and he's got his place and he's got something about him which is very solid and dignified and at home, and he has nothing in the world. But another place that we can train, and again I'm talking about training now, training in home, is simply to relax. Because if you remember that the e-sheket is always the need to repair, to fix, to control, to maye, the Buddha said it, what problems will arise, maye, what problems are there, what problems have been, what problems will be, relax. It's might seem ridiculous, but actually it's not easy, and it's something to remember. Just stop. No, stop, relax. What can happen really? What really is the problem? And then suddenly you see, well, it's not such a problem after all. Things are not so. It's just relax, just let go, just be soft, just be at ease with yourself. Ninochut. Doesn't matter, inside the conditions, whatever they are. And I mean, many of you can feel this, I don't know, last Sunday, Yom Rishon, Lifnei Shavua, I was at the dentist. And I thought about it, you know. So he was doing things to, you can struggle, or just relax, and just let go. It's helpful to get used to inner ease. Ninochut, ease means ninochut, inner ease. Just as a habit, just as a kind of response to the world. Not all the time, but chikuch, or like a Buddha said, inventing what might happen and all that. Just let go, be at ease. Again, behavior, it's not the end of the story, but it's a useful way of navigating in our daily life, which is about conditions. And sometimes another useful way is about our ability to stop. Just to stop. Because we get caught up in the need to control things. And at times we just need to say, wait, die. Reset. Press the button, reset. press the button, reset. And that's one of the values of meditation. Even if we think our meditation is full of thoughts, I can't do it, I sit at home and my mind is racing, it's not working for me. No. Firstly, your mind maybe needs to sit at home and let things be processed. Maybe you need to give your mind time to process what happened to you in the day. So it's actually not a failure. It's actually maybe something that's needed. And secondly, just the stopping to look in the mirror, to see where I'm at, even if there's lots of thinking, just stop has a value. I'm stopping the hitmakrut, the addiction to constantly doing in order to fix my comfort zone, in order to be more comfortable or to stop problems happening or to prevent or to just stop. And if you get used to stopping, it actually can be stopping in the middle of life. You can be busy, you can do things. You don't, stopping doesn't mean taking kazeh hardama klali. It doesn't mean you have to, all meditators and spiritual people have to sit in armchairs under trees all day. That's what they do, that's what the monks do. Not so. Sometimes extremely busy. Look at the Dalai Lama. He's busy like hell from morning to night, but there's something in him that stopped. There's no chikuch in there, no resistance. Something in him deeply stopped, but he's doing a lot. You see the difference there? It's not about action, it's about the way of being with yourself. But we learn that sometimes we need to do, to sit on the meditation cushion, just to stop, to practice stopping. I remember where I had a class of doctors, and most difficult class, I'm afraid to say. There was a Maccabi doctors, and maybe it was me, and maybe I was just the wrong teacher for that. I don't know. Maybe it was me, maybe it was them. I don't know really, but they just couldn't get it. They said, well, I don't experience breathing. Well, I don't experience my body. But you're doctors. But what they really took home was I gave them a few exercises for stopping in the middle of their daily life. So they have 10 patients because they're waiting outside. Someone knocking on the door, they have someone in front of them. How can they stop? I said, put your hands on the table, feel the skin, feel the touch of the table, take 3 breaths and say, this is my time for reset, to do reset between one, and then I'm ready for the next patient. Not just to let it overwhelm, but to stop, even 1 minute. And so stopping is another tool, for a behavior tool that helps us to stop the wheel, the hitmakrut. So I'll not talk too much more now. We're going to go in tomorrow morning. We're going to go into the whole concept of refuge, miflat, which is also fundamental to the Dharma. But there is a way, and it's part of the training, by which we can see everything as home and as a refuge, mechase, and that, and it's also a training, and it's something that maybe you can go home with tonight and ask yourself in a little bit of homework, what is it for me that is a refuge, that is a real refuge, a real miflat, miklat. What is it? Tachat ha-knafayim shel ha-shechina. Where is for me knafayim shel ha-shechina? Do I have כנפיים של השכינה עליי, שמחסה, מחזיק אותי. And what is it? It's a question perhaps we can ask ourselves at home. מה? מיוחד, כן, כן, כן. And so I think that's all I want to say kasiha. And what I thought, maybe we have a few minutes for questions. And particularly what interests me at this point is making the link between what I said now and what we learnt earlier today about home as an experience of homelessness, shall we say, of needing home. And if we look at it now in this rather bigger view, how does it change the view of our needing home, which we define, you know, which we all have, and we defined it here in therapeutic terms, but clearly we are all existentially, to some extent, homeless and uncomfortable because of our homelessness. And how does that fit what we learned this morning with this existential homelessness, which is translated as constantly seeking for home, in neediness making us constantly seek for home, for stopping, for rest, for comfort, for boundary, for stability, for, you know, like I said before. So if there's any questions on that, we can have a few minutes, and then I would like to have a good long meditation to finish the day. So if anything comes up,
I want to say something. Sorry.
Yofi.
Just a thought about this, that
עברית.
סליחה. שיש כאן איזשהו אולי נקודת חיבור בין מה שאתה אומר למה שדיברנו קודם, או נקודה שונה. שיש כאן, במה שאתה אומר, יש איזשהו הנחה שבאמת אנחנו כולנו, יש לנו מתחת להכל איזשהו אי שקט וחוסר ביטחון, חוסר בית. וזה העלה לי את השאלה הזאת של באמת הכוללניות מול השונות. שכל הבוקר דיברנו על המון מצבים שונים, ואיך כל אחד בעצם בסיטואציית חיים שלו והרקע שלו והסיפור חיים שלו כל הקונסטלציה הזאת יצרה איזושהי תחושת חוסר בית מסוימת ומיוחדת. ואני פשוט חושבת על העניין הזה של איך כאן יש איזשהו, כל הבוקר ככה דיברנו על על השונות הזאת, על הייחודיות הזאת של כל אחד, ואיך שזה באמת אנחנו כל אחד מיוחד בזה, והדגשנו באיזשהו מובן את זה. ואני חושבת שזה מעניין, ואולי זה גם נקודת מה שהופך את השילוב הזה של פסיכולוגיה ודרמה למעניין, זה איך מה הדיאלוג בין זה לבין ה-ultimate truth הזה, ש כולנו בעצם, יש משהו שאפשר להגיד על כולנו, במובן של החוסר שקט, החוסר בית הזה, המאוד בסיסי, קיומי. זה משהו.
כמו כמו השיר של מזכיר לי את running over the same old ground, what have we found, what have we found, the same old fear, wish you were here. של הפינק פלויד.
Actually, I've got a song here from Dylan. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home, like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone? You know that song of Dylan. But he gives so many examples, just like you know you were saying about different examples of people that he meets that have go through changes. You know, princess on the steeple, all pretty people, and then they have the diamond ring, and how the change destroys all that. How does it feel to be without a house, a home?
איזה משפט מתוך מהתנ"ך, אבל עם הפרשנות הקבלית שלו. והפרשנות הקבלית, אני אומרת באופן כללי, מאוד דומה בתפיסת עולמה בקווים לבודהיזם, אבל לצורך העניין, מה שחשוב זה מה שחשוב לזכור זה שכל הזמן רק מנסים, זה לא מעניין, הפרשנות הקבלית לוקחת את הפסוקים ומפרשת אותם לגבי עצמך. זאת אומרת, רק לגבי עצמך, זה לא מעניין אותו פשוט. והמשפט הוא, לך לך מארצך או ממולדתך, ומבית אביך, זאת אומרת, עזוב את כל המוכר במעגלים האלה, אל הארץ אשר אראך. זאת אומרת, שהקבלים אומרים, אתה תגלה את הארץ שלך, זאת אומרת, זה...
כן.
ואחר כך, הברכות, זאת אומרת, יש לך לגול גדול ותבורך, אבל הברכות נגמרות, זאת אומרת, כאילו, יש, אם תלך, אם תהיה במצב הגירות הזה, או במצב הגירה הקבוע הזה, נפשית, הרי לא, כל הזמן, זה מרחות. הסיום הוא כל כך מדהים, כלומר, זה עבר ככה, ויהיה ברכה. זאת אומרת שזה, גם תבורך, אבל גם תהיה סוג של השראה וברכה לסביבה שלך, אם אתה תחיה באופן הזה.
יופי.
תודה.
אני חושבת שדווקא, מה שאני כן מגישה, ההבדל לפסיכולוגיה, לדרמה הזה, שהדרמה אומר שהמצב הזה הוא אינהרנטי. הפסיכולוגיה לא אומרת שזה מין משהו אינהרנטי.
נכון. אמרתי את זה, שזה הנקודה שהדרמה הולך לשם. It leaves the psychology behind. But I think psychology leaves the dharma behind, where in exactly your example of the colors of homelessness and the kaleidoscope of homelessness feelings and how to work with the kaleidoscope of the self, that's where the psychology has its territory.
But maybe there are
to appreciate
layers.
This.
To appreciate.
Maybe
there are two layers. אם אני מנסה איכשהו לחבר את זה, לפחות בשביל עצמי, אז המצב הקבוע או האינרנטי של החוסר שקט המתון הזה שיש לכולנו בתור משהו קבוע, בתור משהו ברור או בלתי, והשונות היא המופעים השונים של כל אחד מאיתנו והפגישות שלו עם ה-conditions שלו ועם העולם שלו וכן הלאה. אז זה כמו מין ההגדרה של הדרמה, זה כמו איזה מצע כזה שהוא נקודת התחלה. אין מנוס ממנה. ממנה כל אחד בונה את המגדלים שלו.
כן.
אז בעיניי זה כן איכשהו.
אני חושבת אבל רק העניין ה... appreciation, הערכה של ה... לא לראות את זה בתור איזה מין אינבט, כאילו, אין ברירה, זה מה שיש לנו, אלא באמת להעריך את השונות הזאת, מעבר רק לקבל אותה, אלא באמת, כאילו, כן, אבל...
מה, להעריך את השונות של הבן אדם או להעריך את השונות בין הפסיכולוגיה לדם?
לא, להעריך את השונות בין בני אדם, להעריך את הייחודיות הזאת של הקונסטרוקציה האישית של כל בן אדם, שכל בן אדם יוצר לעצמו.
אני רוצה להגיד על משהו שאני מתנגדת אליו מתחילת היום הזה, שאני לא מוצאת איזשהו חיבור לחוויה של אין בעלי כאיזושהי נקודת מוצא, משום שגם הבודה הוא לא עוזב אין בעלי. שהוא הולך בעצם ליצור את, כן, את הסבל בעולם, הוא עוזב מקום מאוד נוח. כן, אני לא יודעת אם יש, אני מאוד אוהבת את ארתור סי קלארק, כן, בקץ הילדות, דווקא מתאר, כן, מצב של חברה שהיא הופכת להיות חברה שהיא מאוד נינוחה, כן, החוצנים מגיעים ונותנים להם הכל, אין שום בעיה, אבל הם מתחיל לשעמם להם. בסופו של דבר יש איזשהו שינוי שהוא שינוי קוסמי שאי אפשר, כאן יש איזושהי התגלגלות של האנושות לאיזושהי בינה, כן, כזה מין מוח על כזה, כן? כלומר, וגם מה ש, כן, בספר בראשית, כן, כלומר, יש איזושהי יצירה שהיא מובעת מתוך עזיבה. וזה לא דווקא מתוך מקום שהוא אין בית ולא נוח. כלומר, אני לא חווה, כן, מקום של אין בית כסבל. אני יכולה לראות מקום של אין בית, יש בית, מתוך איזושהי בחירה של ללכת וליצור משהו חדש. כלומר, זה לא דווקא חייב להיות מקום סובל. אני חושבת גם על המחקר שאת עשית. אני חושבת שמה לעשות, מחקר חוטני, כן, אין שם רנדומיזציה בכל זאת, וכן, יש לו את ההטייה שלו. כלומר, יש דגימה, כן, די מוטה. שאת באה ומתארת איזושהי, כן, קבוצה עם איכויות וככה מאוד משותפות, כן, ודי פרוגנית, ויכול להיות שבאמת ככה הדברים האלה שאת מתארת הם מאפיינים באמת את אותה קבוצה, אבל יש אנשים שהם לא דווקא חווים חוסר בית כסבל, אלא דווקא מתוך המקום של הנינוחות יכולה או כן להיות איזושהי חוויה של אוקיי, בואו נחדש, בואו נמצוא, בואו נמצא מפה, בואו נבנה משהו שהוא חדש.
אבל זה הבית. אז זאת הגדרה, אתה רוצה בריא. אני מציעה. זאת אומרת, באמצעות הדברים שאתה אמרת, זאת אומרת, אתה הגדרת comfort zone כמקום, יש אנשים שהcomfort zone שלהם הוא מצב הגירות התמידי. זה פשוט הגדרה אחרת, זה לא צריך להיות מקום
מקובל. אני יותר, אני חושבת שאתה יודעת יותר באמת, אני חושבת שאנחנו חושבת אותו דבר, כלומר זה לא דווקא צריך לבוא מתוך איזשהו סבל, זה המון, אוקיי? כלומר, התחושה של הבית, וכאילו דרמה הרבה פעמים סותרת את עצמה, כן? התחושה של הבית היא לא דווקא משהו, או האי תחושה של בית, כן? זה לא דווקא מקום שהוא מסובל, זה יכול להיות מקום של יצירה. והבית הולך איתך, כן, הרולינג סטון, כן, ו-wherever I lay my head, that's my home, כן, כאילו יש משהו, כן,
כן.
רוצה להתייחס, השאלה אם זה סותר, זאת אומרת, אני חושבת שהשאלה המהותית, בשבילי השאלה המהותית, מה נקודת המוצא? האם נקודת המוצא זה אין, או נקודת המוצא זה יש? ואז אין, והתפתחות מתוך המפגש של, של היש והאין. אני חושבת, דוגמה שעולה לי זה מהבן שלי, הוא בן 6.5. נפלה לו שם ראשונה, שלשום, ושמנו לו כסף מתחת לכרית.
לא, את מפיעה.
ברור. ואז הוא רצה ארנק בשביל הכסף. ואז הוא שאל אותי אם הארנק הזה יהיה לו גם כשהוא יהיה אבא. אז אמרתי לו כן, והאיש שלי אמר, ואז הוא אמר, אבל זה לא מספיק לכל הכסף שיהיה לי. אז האיש שלי אמר לו, בבר מצווה יהיה לך ארנק חדש. ואז הוא חושב, הוא אומר, אבל מאיפה יהיה לי כסף כשאני אהיה גדול? אמרתי לו, אתה תעבוד. אבל מאיפה יהיה לי כסף לקנות בית? פתאום המטבע הקטן הזה הפך להיות, אז אמרתי לו, תעבוד ותקנה בית. איך אני אקח את הבית מהמקום שאני אקנה אותו למקום שאני יוצא לגור בו?
בן כמה כל זה?
6.5. ואז אמרתי לו, תראה, אתה ביחד עם אשתך, תחשבו איפה אתם רוצים לגור. אמר לי, אולי אנחנו נבנה בית, אבל איפה נגור עד שנבנה את הבית? אמרתי לו, תוכלו לגור אצלנו. זה היה, וואו, נרגע. עכשיו, למה אני מספרת את כל... זה עלה לי כשאתה גם דיברת על זה שכשיש לך זה יכול גם ליצור את כל ההתניות וה... מטבע קטן, הכניס אותו באמת לכל ה... פתאום הביאו אותו שלב, הביאו אותו פאזה. ממקום שיש דווקא, וממקום שהשן נפלה כי הוא גדל, אבל פתאום אין שן, יש כן. מיד אנחנו באים למלא את זה בכסף. אני חושבת שזה כל הזמן תנועה בין יש ואין. לי חשוב, עם זה אני מאוד מזדהה, אני מאמינה בזה, חשוב לי אולי בתוך הדיבור הזה להגיד את זה, זה מתחיל מיש או... יש אמירה של בשלה, לסתור בשלה, שהאדם מגיע להריסה, שהחיים שלנו מתחילים מההריסה שמחכה לנו. מחכה פה הריסה, כשאנחנו מגיעים לעולם, מחכה הריסה ומשם אנחנו מתחילים את החיים, ולא דווקא מהאם.
זה ההתאחות וההתפרקות, שזה כל הזמן...
התאחות,
שדברים מתאחים לפעמים, ומתפרקים כל הזמן, ולהסתכל על זה. זה
לאו דווקא מקום
של סבל.
המקום של סבל זה בכמה כיוונים. אחד, שאף פעם דברים לא נשאר ככה כמו שהם. תמיד יש שינוי. אז יש בן אדם עם הכי חוסן, is it the word? והכי כזה גמישות והכי, ופחות הזדוקקות, אבל הוא צריך לעשות משהו כדי יש שינוי, ויש שינוי, החיים מתפרקים אותנו, אנחנו פשוט מתפרקים במשך זמן, ואז יהיה מוות, ואז התאים שלנו והמולקולרים שלנו נעלם, חוזרים ליקום. אז הפירוק קורה כל הזמן. זה אומר שיש דברים משתנה, וזה מקור אחד. מקור שני, שרואים באופן אולטימטיבי, שאפילו הכי נוח, מקום הכי נוח, זה לא גן עדן, זה לא עץ חיים. זה עדיין, זה אחרי גירוש מגן עדן. והבן אדם יכול להיות ממש blessings after blessings after blessings, and a really comfortable life, and that's great. And then he needs no Western psychology at all. The Western psychology or any psychology is unnecessary. But often ultimately or spiritually, there will be suffering. There will be suffering of this kind or another kind, of limitation, of safek, of tavniyot bed barosh, of not wanting to lose ma sheyesh, our comfort that is there, not wanting to lose it. Or shehabayit pitom afoch lebeit zohar, כמו הבודה, הוא יצא מהבית, נדבר על זה. So it's the suffering, I think you're absolutely right, in the psychological dimension, for sure you can have a wonderful life and no suffering, you don't have to be. So, but what we're talking about is existential angst, which is actually deep, is not really suffering in the sense of a hard life, it's something underneath in the consciousness itself, of e sheket. I'm sorry?
ואם יש לך את החוויה, אז יש לך בית.
איזה חוויה?
האקזיסטנציאלית הזאת שאתה בעצם מקבל את זה.
כן. זה חלק של הבית יותר עמוק. כן, כן.
אני רציתי לשאול שאלה יותר עקרונית. סליחה, זה קצת חצוף אולי, אבל למה בחרתם כאילו את השילוב הזה בין הפסיכולוגיה לדרמה? אני כאילו, אני צריכה להגיד, אני קצת מאוכזבת ממה ש, כאילו, מה שלמדתי על הדרמה האבסולוטית. כאילו, אני חושבת ש, כאילו, אני חשבתי שיהיה איזשהו חיבור, אני חושבת שהמשק בדיוק, אני לא רוצה שיש משק בכלל, להפך, מאוד מאוד רחוקים אחד מהשני. כאילו, למה באמת פסיכולוגיה ודרמה?
קודם כל, זה מכן, למה לא? אפשר להגיד, it's really fascinating as a source. The fact that you noticed the way that this is there and that is there, but other people in this room including yourself just now, and myself many times, here is overlap. And because these are languages, the psychology language is a language in our blood from the West, and we want to learn another language too, it's good to base Buddhism on what we know, what is our existing language, language of mind. Buddhism is also a language of mind, but it's a language of mind that can be very foreign. Ma'od kazeh rechok, az gam ze tov lekarkeh oto betoch ma she'ech ha'moach ma'aravi oved. Our concepts in the West, our own, we have education, we have, so it's good to ground it in our world. So that's why we make this shiluv, and I think it's very interesting.
אני רק רוצה להוסיף שאני חושבת כשלוקחים איזשהו מושג או איזשהו שאלה ופשוט מנסים להסתכל עליה דרך שתי הזוויות האלה או המשקפיים האלה, אני חושבת שאפשר באמת